this is what I'm doing, because I know that entertainment is the gateway to transformation, and entertainment is the language of the masses. And if I could plant just a seed of hope, connection, and expression through comedy, it could help people heal their relationship with money.
Family life is essential. Jim and I are on a mission to help you live the best one. You'll hear personal stories from thought leaders of strengths and struggles with proven strategies to help you make the most of your 18 summers. I'm your co-host, Jamie Shields.
Hey, 18 Summers Tribe. Jim and Jamie coming up to you for another episode of 18 Summers Family Podcast. This is a special one. I'm super excited. We're here with a friend of mine that I've known for like 12 years now. I watched him from the beginning of his, he's a New York Times and Wall Street Journal bestselling author, a book called Killing Sacred Cows. That's actually where Garrett and I believe we met either in Calgary or Vegas. It was one of the events, became friends, started hanging out with families. But he has now not only become a successful entrepreneur, author, and family man, he has gone into something we always try to teach, which is his passion for comedy and teaching, which we're going to talk about today. Garrett Gunderson, thanks for being here today, buddy.
Hey, good to see you guys again. It was awesome taking my son, Brett, to board meetings back in the day before it was even called 18 Summers, and getting him out surfing.
And some good memories
out of his shell. But I remember you asked him what he wanted to be when he grew up, and he said happy. So I thought that was a good answer.
Oh, I love that.
That's such a good one.
I think how old was he when he came, and how old is he now? I'm trying to do that math.
He's 16 now, and I think he's twice the height that he was when he came out there. He's taller than I am. So
he's tall. I saw that last picture you texted me last year, and I'm like, holy cow, what are you feeding him? Like, it's
I don't know, was he 9 or 10 or 11 or something? Somewhere in that age.
Yeah, I think that was about the age, because that was 7 years ago, maybe. So, but that's something that we've always shared in common from any of our mastermind groups. I watch you build the wealth consulting, and then I mean, I'm proud to say, I remember some of the talks, I think we were in Colorado that time. You're like, I'm going to start doing more comedy. I said, I can't wait. And I think I even had to announce you for that. And I said, this is something you don't know about, my friend. He's really good at this. And now to watch you actually take this talent and combine it with not only making people laugh, but teach them about money, it's pretty fascinating. I mean, how did this happen? Tell me about it.
Well, in 2005, we were at this formal financial function in Costa Rica. I know you spent some time down in Costa Rica, and we were at the Four Seasons, and this band finished playing, and they had like a microphone, like an old school microphone, and I had too much tequila. So I walked up to the microphone on a dare and started telling jokes, but it went horrendous because I was inebriated. I wasn't prepared. And people laughed, but not because it was funny, more like they were laughing at the train wreck that they were watching. So this scarred my wife forever. And I would be speaking, and I'd be like, dude, people are laughing at me a ton. Maybe I should try some stand-up comedy. She goes, babe, you're not as funny as you think you are. You're making them money, so they're just being nice. Like, she's discouraging it the whole time. And then we did this summer in Italy. And when we came back, for my birthday, we were at a baseball game, and it was kind of slow, so I'm telling some jokes, and my wife is like, where are you getting these? These are funny. I'm like, from my own brain. And so that, like, cracked the door that maybe I'm funny.
There was a chance.
And that Sunday, I spoke at my buddy Keith Yackey's event, and he gets up and introduced me. He goes, oh, our next speaker's effing hilarious, one of the funniest guys you'll meet. And I'm like, I'm giving a 45-minute financial talk. He's telling people how funny I am. So I just get up and start telling some jokes to start with. It goes really well, so I just call my buddy, who's done all these like events for us, where we'll do like an event and then we bring entertainment, and they would do a musical comedy show. He was runner up on Last Comic Standing. And I said, dude, I've got this entire premise about how I look like Jesus, but maybe I'm like Jesus's brother without the powers, or like, and so we sat down the next day, wrote a 4-minute and 20-second set that I then performed at open mic, because I almost had to, because I invited all my local friends so I wouldn't back out. And they were like, I want to see how this goes. So there's like 6 rows of them. I don't know if they were like, is this going to be a train wreck, or if they were cheering me on, but they showed up and I couldn't back out, and it went really well. And so my buddy goes, hey, you just start opening for us and do comedy. And let's fast forward 2 years, August 2019, I'm opening for their special that they're filming. And I have a really decent set, and this Hollywood manager comes up and he goes, so what are you doing with this comedy thing? I'm like, it's a hobby. It's just kind of fun. He goes, yeah, but you know a lot about money and you're funny. He goes, no one's ever done that before. Like, what if you did that? He says, I think there's something there. And he started emailing me afterwards. And then we met November of 2019. He goes, I want to represent you. He says, from the time I shook your hand, I knew you were going to do a special. So it took me about a year to take that on. And then in November of 2020, I decided I'm going to write a comedy special around money. Had it written mostly by January 9th and just rehearsed it 5 days a week. I mean, you asked me one simple question. I'm telling you like more details than you could ever imagine. I know. But
no, we want to hear the story unfold. And this is what people need, because it takes a lot of guts to keep your hobbies as an adult.
Well, look, man, and hobbies unlock so much in us, because it gives us space and it gives us like time to listen to our intuition instead of the noisy world. And so like, I have fun when I sit down and write jokes, partially because I try them on my wife. She goes, oh, that's not ready. Or I go to my buddy that writes comedy and we work on it together. And so we have so much fun in the process. But I'm going to tell you, I had hernia surgery November 3rd. On November 15th is when I was going to meet with my manager to talk about the special. And so for 3 days, I was like, what in the hell am I thinking? I am not capable of doing comedy. This is stupid. I've only done 33 minutes on stage ever doing comedy, and I'm going to do a full special. And I'm like in my head, and I just turn on the documentary, The Zen Diaries of Gary Shandling, and watch it. And I'm like, oh my God, he's as crazy as I am. He had the same, they're interviewing these comedians, they're all going through this. And I'm like, so I come out of surgery. Okay. I fly to Malibu, spend 2 days, and I look like a serial killer. I'm in this hotel where we have 3x5 cards covering the entire wall with different what jokes that might be and what the premise might be with the jokes that go with it. We have red, green, and yellow. So yellow is like maybe, red's like not ready at all, and green is like this joke is definitely going to be in the list. And so we went from 42 topics down to probably more like 28, 29 topics, and then wrote bits for it. And then by January 9th, it was written, but I started to test it in December on Zoom. You know what it's like doing comedy on Zoom?
That's tough.
But I cheated the system. So I created a little comedy club in my basement, put up this gray curtain, put up cameras, and I had a microphone stand and a microphone, and I would actually invite a few people to be in person. So I would Zoom comedy, but I'd have a few people. My manager's watching, he's like, dude, how are you doing that? That is amazing. And I'm like, oh, dude, I have people that are there live, so I have some timing.
Love that.
But dude, even the night before we filmed my special, which the special has Marty Kollner, executive producer, who did the first comedy special ever with Steve Martin. He did a bunch of Robin Williams. George Carlin was the best man. He won an Emmy with Seinfeld. So I have like one of the main dudes ever. And I've got an Emmy nominated director and all this. And I'm like, the night before we're filming the special, I'm like, well, my friends that can't make it into town, I'll just invite some of them to be on a Zoom, and I'll just have a really good crush it the night before. And it was horrible, dude. I was so tired and my timing was so bad. My buddy Walker gets on and he mutes. He has the best laugh ever. And I'm like, dude, why did you mute? He goes, well, I didn't want to like interrupt you with my laughter. I'm
that's
like,
that's the problem.
I'm like, bro, I can't even have the people like turn their camera off. They put it on mute. I'm just talking to a computer screen.
Yeah.
And the
it's
best
so
part is
hard. I don't know how you did. I'm trying to remember who had an online event.
It was MMT. It was like a magic show,
and,
but then the
and then they brought in
off.
A comedian, but everyone's muted. So even I can see people laughing. You can hear nothing. I'm like, oh man, it's because it was this thing. Mute yourself so you don't disturb.
Because you also don't want to hear like the dog barking.
Yeah, but you don't want, a comedian doesn't want to hear silence either. So,
dude, I did MMT in Park City, Mastermind Talks. I did comedy, right? And so I'm emceeing because Jason asked me to MC, and then the first person's supposed to go 5 minutes. They do like 20 minutes and most of it's not funny. And I'm coming back up to MC. I'm kind of pissed because I know Jason likes to run a tight ship. I remember Greg Hasbrot looking with terror in the crowd because I spoke at his event, Engaged Today, way back in 2009, right?
Yeah, we were there.
Yeah, with Dalai Lama. I was like a killer. And he just looked like, oh my God, someone's canceled and they're going to just have Garrett fill in. This is going to be awful. And it went much better than he thought, which was...
We were there. Yeah, we were there.
The bar's low, man. I'm the funniest guy in money because the bar's low. I mean, I've been working on this like what you wouldn't believe, man, just like every day. And I just did a set in La Jolla at the Comedy Store, sold out crowd. Standing ovation at the end. It was just like the most comfortable time I've ever had on stage, the most connected with the crowd. And I'm teaching them things about money, but through comedy. I'm funny first, but then like my sound engineer was like, I felt like I was gutturally laughing and then getting some gut punches here or there. And so we're supposed to learn three times more when we laugh.
Oh, sure.
I'm like, might as well make, or if you scare people, I figured rather than scare the shit out of people, I should make them laugh. Yeah. And that would be a better way to teach them stuff.
Plenty of people doing that right now.
So. Yeah, yeah. That's, so we'll leave that to social media.
Yeah, especially around money, right? That's normally the click thing of like, oh, you're right. Doomed unless you learn this. So I love what you're doing. And we've watched, I mean, we were there that night at MMT, and I think you have learned how to push the ball downhill instead of uphill. But it took the courage to do it. But I was like, gosh, the pro comedian was not funny that night. I was there. I was like, Garrett, you had us laughing. So we've been cheering from the sidelines. And I can't help but think that this puts an example for your own kids. I mean, what have your kids said? Are they kind of like, holy cow, dad's actually not a lame dad and he's doing something he loves, so I can't hold back. I mean, are you just seeing some ahas?
You know what happened? So the night we filmed on April 15th, Roman, my youngest son, opened for me at 13 years old. He did 5 minutes.
Wow.
He did 5 minutes and he crushed it. The crowd was so excited because he's 13 that when I got up there, the energy was lifted. So he actually improved the entire thing and negotiated $300 from me. He says, I'm only going on if I get $300 tonight. And he did it right before I go, well, all right, $300. And I just gave it to him because I thought it was funny. I go, by the way, when you wait till the last minute and you go on or not go on, you could ask for more probably and get it. But I'm your dad. I would have just gotten it back from you through labor. So don't worry about it. And Breck, he has watched the special because we've edited it down 3 times. Like that kid, I can't get him to sit down with me for anything unless I watch anime with him. But he loved it. So we had my family come to a mix and mingle beforehand. My kids are hanging out with them. And they also got to watch me struggle. They also got to watch me like work on the bits before they were ready and work on memorizing it. Sometimes they were working with me while I was going through 3x5 cards. And I think that's important for them to see the struggle and to see like the process, not just like, oh, your dad's always kind of your hero when you're a kid. Like I always talk about like when my kids used to think I could beat up Mike Tyson. And I was like, oh, that's cute. I cannot beat him up. No, you can. I'm like, I assure you, that's not going to end well for me. But I'm like, it's easy to have that. It's harder to keep that, right? And it's good to like keep that kind of admiration. But for the real things, like, hey, guys, like I'm doing something because I'm committed to it. And I'm going all in. And we're going to do this at a professional level. But it doesn't just happen overnight. And at the same time, you can see, you can accelerate the results if you commit to it. And so I inspired my son to open for me, my other son to watch it multiple times. I think it's been a game changer for them. And even when I went on tour the first 2 dates, they're like, oh, he's got this. Like they were actually super, like they figured it was good. I mean, I lost a lot of sleep, dude. This is bumped up against my insecurities like you wouldn't believe. I'm like, 15 cities? I'm a rookie comedian. It's COVID. We're in the middle of COVID. I'm a rookie comedian. Like if it wasn't for people like you just showing up and supporting and telling people, it would be a lot more concerning. But the Comedy Store said, when can we have you back and rebook me? You know, and they said any day, like we don't care, Friday night, Saturday night. So they're ready for me to headline after the first set. So that's a really exciting thing to see happen. And just the people behind this project. And I'm like a little kid that has no boundaries. I've been, watch my special, guys. I probably sent it to you 3 times. Like, did you watch it yet? Like, I can't help myself. I'm just so excited to share it.
And I loved that you've shared that with your children and they've seen, like you said, not just the excitement and the doing well in it and getting invited back, but also the struggle that you have to practice, that you're not just relying on yourself, but on other people, including them and making them part of the process. I think that's huge. And the things that you're teaching them. Have you always been passionate? Like, would you say comedy seems to be a passion of yours? It's definitely an interest that you're doing well at. Were you always interested?
Oh, when I was a little kid, my uncles were super funny on both sides of the family. And they told inappropriate jokes and I tried to learn every one. I would write them down as soon as I knew how to write. I would repeat them. And I didn't even know what I was saying, but I knew I'd get a reaction. I'd get in trouble for my mom. But I had this Mormon side of my family and a Catholic side of my family. And this was the one commonality. They wanted me to sit around and tell jokes. Like my grandma just turned 90. And we drive 2.5 hours to go see her. Everybody's at the park, the whole family. And I sit down and I'm like, Grandma, how you been? Are you going to tell your jokes? Well, yeah. So happy birthday. When are you going to tell your jokes? 3 times in a row. So I just said, okay, guys, we're telling the jokes. And by the way, these are the jokes that would get me canceled. They're not appropriate. This is my Mormon grandma, and she thinks they're hilarious. She's heard them 20 times, and it's the highlight of her birthday. So I feel like comedy's connected me to family from the time I was little. And what it does is it gets us out of like the fear of what's going on. Like, we're not worried about and having regret of the past. We're not having fear of the future. We're just present when we're laughing. And we can joke about things that most people would never talk about. And I think it releases the pain because you're like, oh, wait, this is actually common, even though I thought I was isolated and painful for me. And like, a lot of my jokes are like mostly true stories about my family. I mean, I have so many jokes about money, but the stuff that I kind of mix in there are like real stories. Like one, I remember when I was at GoBundance and you yelled from the crowd, you're like, tell a joke in the middle of a speech. They're like, what questions you have? And Jim's like, I want to hear a joke. So I go, well, I just wrote this joke. It was the first time I told it. It made the special. I go, yeah, my kids were misbehaving the other day. And my wife was like, hey, take care of your kids. I'm like, why are they always my kids when they act like a-holes, by the way? And I'm like, but she's always had this rule. We do not spank our kids. But that was before quarantine and homeschool. So I go, hey, babe, I still can't hit them, right? She's like, no. I'm like, not even if they hit me first. And so I just sat them down and did the first thing that came to my mind. I'm like, look, kids, you better start behaving. I have to beat your mother.
I remember you saying that.
She wasn't even mad. She's like, I'll take a chop to the throat if you get him to shut the hell up. I mean, this is a real conversation that we had. I literally sat the kids down and said, you better behave or I'm having to beat your mother. And we laughed hysterically as a family in the middle of an intense moment. And then we were able to have a regular conversation because it released some of the stress.
Yeah, and then so often as parents or as family, we take ourselves so seriously, right? Like, oh, my role has to be the heavy or whatever. And it doesn't. And so fun to hear to not take yourself too seriously and show your children like, I fuck around too. Like we all do it and we all get it.
Yeah.
And that's his biggest way. He always tells the kids like, I know I'm annoying, but if I'm silly, I'm safe. And I think that that's just a way to give your children that safety and security.
That's great. Good point.
Have you seen, since you've been sharing this passion with your family, has anyone come up with any new passions of their own from your wife or any of the children? Have you been like, hey, okay, they're going to try that. Well, maybe
one,
it's
the one
inspired
was,
by you.
Was doing
the bit. Yeah.
Yeah. And like, so we did this video with for Wealth Factory and it was on legacy. And we actually had the four of us. We were talking about how we do these family meetings. So I'm like, let me give you guys an example of how the family meetings run. And it was just like Breck and Roman joking around the entire hour. They didn't know how many people were on. They thought recording. That was at the time there was like 80 some people on and they're just cracking jokes, but it's like, it makes a lot more fun in those moments. And so I'm always trying to make the kids laugh and they're always trying to do the same. I think it makes it a lot more light around here. And I'm a hobbyist at this point. Like I got my whiskey somm. I love to make really good coffee and I've gone and taken classes from baristas because I think in my 20s and halfway through my 30s, it was all about work and doing more and the hustle and the grind. And the problem is anytime I wasn't doing that, I was exhausted. But now having hobbies, like I have this renewal where I have plenty of energy. So if it's time to hang out with the kids, I'm actually there. I'm actually comfortable and I had to get a lot better at delegating. And then, yeah, I had this crossover where one of my main hobbies turned into a career. Like I literally sold my business. This is what I'm doing because I know that entertainment is the gateway to transformation and entertainment is the language of the masses. And if I could plant just a seed of hope, connection, and expression through comedy, it could help people heal their relationship with money. And I think it's cool for my kids to see like me follow that because it's one thing when you don't know what to do and you hustle, it's another thing to leave behind something that you know that's familiar, that works, and that is successful for something that is even a higher level of excitement and expression. And so I've been working on a one-man show for longer than the comedy where I act out four characters, I play guitar, I do spoken word. And that's actually been the most instrumental thing for the family because it's a lot deeper and more profound than the comedy stuff. And so it had my youngest go, hey, Dad, I thought you had to sacrifice to succeed because the whole notion is you don't have to sacrifice for success, which a lot of people don't really talk about that. And here I'm now having this profound conversations with the kids, right? Around the play. And like even my nephew, who's 8 years old, watched me do the play at one of the practices. And then they asked him, what did you learn? And he's talking about the four characters and which one he is. And that's part of the money quiz that you took. So like, it's really cool to like have my son tell me, well, when I forget a line, this is what I do. Or when we're driving to the cabin, have Breck, my oldest son, listening. So hopefully some of this sinks in because he's probably heard it 40 or 50 times in rehearsal. And they watch me absolutely struggle with that as well or improve on that. And I did that one time as a trial on April 16th after we did the special. And 80% of the room cried. Longest standing ovation that I've ever been part of. Not saying that it's great for me, saying it was great because it connected with people, because it was a language that people wanted to experience. And I'm talking about the most painful moments of my life. And it led to these conversations. Like when I was first married, I was a miser, which meant it was all about scrimping, sacrificing, saving, budgeting, right? And so my wife's favorite pastime is to tell stories to the kids of when I was a miser. And the kids laugh hysterically at these stories because they don't know that person. This is 19 years later. I'm far from the miser. So we're laughing and joking and my wife's roasting me. And then all of a sudden, my son goes, why was Dad a miser? And Carrie says, because he thought it was the best thing for the family at the time.
Wow.
And I was like,
that powerful.
So healing for me too.
You know, Garrett, I remember, I think it was Keith Cunningham when I first started doing real estate talks. And he said something really powerful to me. He said, look, you have to remember as a speaker, there's two things you can do. You can teach someone a valuable lesson. You can entertain them. Those are your two things. But a lot of people do neither. He's like, you have to watch some of these speakers. They do neither. They don't teach them a valuable lesson. They're not entertaining. So he says, and I've had to see so many speakers over the world, don't do that. If you can teach them a lesson and entertain them, like that's the 1-2 punch. And to see you doing this with money now, it's fascinating. I mean, it's what we teach at our retreats where it's like, what are your greatest gifts and talents? I just want to make sure you see you're doing both. You're teaching a valuable lesson and entertaining. And I don't, 50% of professional speakers out there really do neither. And so just hats off that you've taken this big step in this direction. Because it wasn't scary to say, I'm giving up this thing that you misered your way to wealth to a certain point, and now you gave that up to go into comedy.
Well, yeah, it's confronting for sure, because I mean, I'm like, let's do this in the middle of COVID. Let's do money, which is a tougher topic. Let's keep it fairly clean. I'm PG-13, which in my everyday life, I'm not PG-13. But when I'm thinking about how I'm going to make an impact, and if I can refine the craft, if I can get it done just as funny without vulgarity, I am going for that because I do feel like it has more mass appeal. And it also challenges me. That challenges me to think more clearly. And look, this was cool. When we were in La Jolla, one of my friends, Peter Scott, came to the show. He brought some people with him and he used to work for the Chicago Mercantile Exchange. So he knows a lot about finance. And he said after the show, his wife and he had the most transformational 2-hour conversation around money. So as much as I love the laughter, I'm not going to lie, it is music to my ears. It is so much fun hearing about the after effect of someone saying, hey, this really led to an impactful conversation. Like, that's what I'm inventing. I'm inventing comedy with purpose. Like, yeah, there's political commentary, there's religious commentary around comedy, but like, there isn't a lot of practical commentary in comedy. I mean, it's pretty much genuinely entertainment for the majority, but I'm leading with the entertainment factor and sprinkling in the education and then giving resources afterwards. Like I got up, most comedians finish, they sell their merchandise. Hey, we got shirts, we got whatever. I don't know. I've even heard him still selling CDs and DVDs. I don't know who's buying those these days, but I don't know. So I just said, well, here, you could take this quiz. Just go to GarrettGunderson.com/quiz. And I can keep in relationship with them. I can add value to them after the comedy special. So I'm like, if I write Killing Sacred Cows and sell 100,000 copies, how many of the 100,000 people actually read the book? But
it's tough to say.
56-minute comedy special, I think we're going to get 10 times the amount of engagement and throughput where someone gets to the end of it in a much more succinct manner. So
yeah, I agree.
It's still early, but that's what I'm doing and it's what I'm excited about. And it feels like we've got real momentum with it.
And I think it's great that you're integrating the two things, comedy and money. And on the same vein of integration, so many people don't communicate finances and money with their spouse, much less their children. And so where do you think is a good starting point? I know you're the money guy, so it's natural for you to integrate that into your family, but how can other families integrate?
Yeah, I just met this woman, Julia Cook, who's sold 3 million children's books. And we're talking about collaborating on a money book for kids, awesome. Which will help with that conversation. But the starter conversation for me is earning money, spending money, giving money, and saving money. Those are 4 really foundational conversations to have with kids early on. And then just talking about What is money? Why is money important? What can money do and what can money not do? And like in my play, there's a lot of conversation around money being a man-made efficient tool for exchange. Money represents value, but it's not why you're valuable. People confuse net worth and self-worth all the time. They're not the same thing. And it's really helped me having these conversations with the kids about what is money and what it can do and what it can't do. And I actually start the special with a 5-minute rap video that is on all of the names we have in society for money and all of the faulty notions inside of that. And that's where the name of the special comes from, the American Ream, because we're all caught up in this game that's not a winning game. We're caught up in this game of money that no matter what you do, you still lose. And if we don't take time to create a game worth winning, we lose from the beginning. But if we create the game worth winning by our set of rules, by our standards, what you guys do with 18 summers and you say, hey, look, this is how much time the kids are here. This is what we're going to do. We're going to be super intentional with it, with the time that we spend, with the conversations we have, what we do on a quarterly basis. You've called that game into a successful form in your life where most people play the game called, I'm too busy, not right now. We'll get around to it later, one day, someday, and that shit just passes them by. Yeah. So we've got to create a game worth winning, and we got to understand money's role in that game instead of money being the game. When money is the game, you will lose because it's a terrible solo artist. It's a good companion. If it's not a companion, it's a solo artist, you will define yourself by things that are artificial, materialistic, and you'll lose your connection to yourself and the people that you love. Money's important. If we say it's unimportant, then we're probably not going to have a lot of it. But ultimately, it's not the most important. It is just a component, not the end goal. And that's where society's confused. We're not seeing people because we're blinded by money. And what we really want is the connection to the people on the other side. We think money's what's the conduit or the currency, where it's not really that. It's at most just a place to engage others and in order to reward for our talents and abilities, but not love. And when people think money and love are the same thing, they get really fucked up in the head.
Yeah, I agree. And right there, I mean, that, Garrett, should be a syllabus for a class that I never had in college. And just listing those things on one hand, I had a 4-year business degree from what was considered a really good school. I didn't learn any of that. Nothing. None of that. So it was taught. And I think that's why people like you are going to succeed, because the litmus test says, wow, this shit's for real. And we love that. I mean, for our kids, I will surpass all what people say they should learn to know what I know, think they should, which is this. So yeah. I won't even get in today to the quiz. I took the quiz, as I told you, and you know, I think it's an amazing tool that I encourage everyone in our tribe to go to GarrettGunderson.com and find out your dark side of
go to the very bottom of the page and the quiz is there, no charge.
It's great. And I've taken it. And I think it's like when I told you mine, you're like, yeah, that's you. I mean, because we've talked about our businesses a lot. And I think that's super helpful for people to do. And I highly encourage it. Obviously, before we get to our finale question, which I think you know about, but I'm definitely interested to hear it from you, I do want to let our whole 18 Summers tribe know, like, I am all about active learning. I'm all about getting in the trenches and also supporting our 18 Summers tribe. Garrett has been with us for a very long time, been to our retreats. We've had lots of family time together. And so we did, I told you, we had crazy times. We're going to be in Costa Rica, living and playing from there, and other events already set up. But we did figure out we are going up for Philadelphia. We're going to fly up. We've already booked 6 tickets for 2 very good couple friends of ours who are also entrepreneurs. So we will be front and center for the Philadelphia show. Monday after Thanksgiving. Yeah. So any of our Philadelphia crowd, and I know we have Philadelphia crowd there from different groups, GoBundance and that, who we're friends with and work with. Hopefully they'll join us because we will be there cheering. We're making a little vacation of it for me and Jamie. So we will be up there front and center to support you.
And it will be a unique show because I can't go to Philadelphia without making fun of Philadelphia. So there is going to be some, like when I was in California, I made fun of California to the point where I thought I'd lose the crowd and they went nuts. They loved it. So Philly's another one of those places that just deserves some wrath.
They're all self-deprecation. So I think they're huge, and we'll have some true Philly people there for you. Perfect. We're excited. We'll see you there, buddy. One thing
glad to hear that, by the way.
We're excited. We're so excited. So our grabber question that we've been asking for the last year and a half is we have to pull on a smarter self than just our younger. Everyone says, Garrett, what would you say to your 21-year-old self? And that's a great question. I agree with that. Mm-hmm. And it's something we learn. But through the pandemic, through business growth, I've had to start asking the question, what would my 75-year-old self tell me right now? So we call it the 75-year-old self question. Yeah. So I wanted to know for our crowd, this is how we usually end every episode. What would 75-year-old Garrett give advice on? What would he say? What would his advice be, the 75-year-old Garrett?
The 75-year-old would say, most of your pain exists from artificial deadlines. And these artificial deadlines take you out of being present. And the work that you've been doing to become more present is the rewarding work that will lead to the riches that matter most in your life. So do the work to eliminate the worry. Do the work to stay connected to people and continue to love your life and not allow distractions disguised as opportunities to take you off the course.
Love it. Wow.
That's good.
That's awesome. Artificial deadlines. Isn't that good? Because we're all got to get this done. But do you, and I love this. This has been inspiring for me, as you know, and that's a very, very deep wisdom right there. Anything?
Eliminate worry, stay connected, and love your life. Good stuff.
I love it. Well, you're definitely setting an example of that. We're very proud of you. We've been cheering from the sideline. Obviously, we've been staying in touch. We love the special. We were there for some of the first times you did it. It's great to see you evolving. Thank you for doing it. I think you're setting a great example for not only your family, but ours, because they know you as well. My kids already don't think I'm funny, so this is really hard on me, but there's hope.
Hey, you can borrow some jokes if any of them are helpful to you and just take over the fifth. Yeah, just do it. And
like, his delivery would still be
like, Dad, we heard Garrett say that. I'm like, no, F Garrett. That's my joke.
Well, like I remember when I was preparing for this, I was writing in February and I was like, you've got to be good. You're damn right. You got to be good because you got to keep your son's attention over YouTube, over video games and everything else. But if you're present, that will happen. And I got to tell you, when I did the special on April 15th, it's the most present I've been to that point in my life. Oh, cool. Because I only spoke words that were in my head. There was no secondary conversation. I didn't have any thought in my head that the crowd didn't hear. My son yawned. I said, oh, my son just yawned in the middle of my special. That feels good, buddy. Thanks so much. I'm about to tell a joke about sexting my wife. I'm like, hey, guys, my father-in-law is up here in the balcony. This is going to be a lot of fun. I saw my aunt. I'm like, remember when I peed my pants at your house when I was a little kid, Aunt Jackie, and you took care of me? Like, I just let the crowd into who I am in that moment. And so the more we do that, I think the more we connect to those people, right? There's some people that we just connect to because they're so transparent and they're so open. And some of them are just unintentionally funny because they have no filter. But if you go to GarrettGunderson.com and you click on the tickets, you can enter FF20. It stands for Friends and Family 20. Gives you $20 off the ticket. So that's for your guys' tribe and community, because those that stayed all the way to the end and listened to my stories, they deserve a little discount is what I feel like.
That's awesome. I love it. Okay. Anywhere else you want folks to find you? Any links or anywhere you put anything else up that you'd love to have?
I mean, they can do GarrettGunderson.com/quiz and it'll take them right to the quiz. I think or just go to my site, GarrettGunderson.com, navigate that. It's a new site that my business partner.
It looks great. Built.
Yeah. I think he did a great job, Corey. Yeah.
And that's where they buy the American Ream Tour. It's called the American Ream Tour, which we got a laugh out of too. So you guys can buy the tickets right there.
And it's not a porno. It's not a porno. I think that's
Well, and Jim's like,
I had to Google what it
meant.
He's
like, what is it? I said, I'm pretty sure it means.
Like, what's Jim done the last hour on Google looking at the American Ream? What the hell did you find?
For Google, like, and I was like, oh, wait.
I'm like, I think it means like money kicks your ass.
Yeah, we think we're living the dream, but we're being screwed by all these notions of more, bigger, better, faster, no time, all that kind of stuff.
I got it, Garrett. We're good.
She explains it.
She explained it to him good.
I translate him. Yes, you're great. Well, thank you so much for being here.
Yeah, thanks, Garrett. We'll see you in November.
Awesome. See you guys. Appreciate it.
Thanks for joining the 18 Summers podcast and putting your family in priority position. Subscribe and leave a review and help other families just like you.